Declaration number 14978, Charles Turnbull, Reel 15.
Mr. Turnbull, Reel 15. When did you leave Scotland, Mr. Turnbull?
We left Scotland the back end of 1943. Could be getting into 1944 now.
Where did you go?
Initially, I think we went down to Wales again, first of all. And we sort of reorganised there, did a little bit more training before we were moved down into Norfolk. Of course, that was getting nearer towards the invasion period. Norfolk was the last place we were in.
What time would this be?
This would be into the May.
See, although you obviously hadn't been told, you would know pretty well that D-Day was coming, an invasion of Europe was coming.
It was becoming fairly obvious now that something was about to happen. Exactly where it would happen, well, of course, we could only surmise.
How did you feel about the fact that you'd be involved in this, or may be involved in this?
Well, after all this time, we knew that this had to happen. And we trained for it. I would say that really we were ready for it. We knew that this had to happen. And it was one of the things that had to be. Whilst one wondered how it would all come about, because we knew that we trained well, that it was really something which would be quite a hazardous operation. And according to all reports that we'd heard, by this time, the German formations were well entrenched in the coastal areas of France, and had had a lot of time to prepare fortifications, etc., that everybody knew that it wouldn't be an easy operation. And how one would survive through it all, well...
Had you got any more leave whilst you were in England and Scotland and Wales?
Yes, we'd had leave. I can remember on one occasion, I think, getting 14 days. And even people at home then knew, of course, that things were getting close to something happening after what they'd had to endure. One had to remember that even the civilian population, they hadn't had an easy time. And whilst more things happened in southern England, as far as in the Midlands, as far as the population being bombed, etc., things hadn't been quite as bad as that in the north. But what they had had to survive on, with minimum rations, etc., things hadn't been very easy for the civilian population. So I think the reaction was, well, it's something that has to be done. Let us get on and get the job done.
Your family must have been getting concerned about the fact that you were going to be more deeply involved.
Well, they were. I can always remember my father and mother's reaction, mother in particular, that she was really very bothered about how it would all really end. And of course at that time I had my wife to think about, who was still working in Blackpool and was away from her parents. And by this time, after an initial job that she had there, she had been sent to an aircraft factory and was concerned with making Wellington bombers. That what she had been installed with down on the south shore of Blackpool. So that was her next period, what she had to contend with. And with having to make a life of her own in Blackpool and none of her family there, well, that wasn't an easy task either. She had her friends who she'd made, and one family in particular, who a gentleman she worked with in the factory had offered her accommodation at their home, which she had taken up, and she'd settled down reasonably well. So apart from short visits to her family in Durham, well, she had to conduct her own life and at the same time be worried whether we would ever get back together and live some sort of a normal married life.
Whereabouts in Norfolk were you?
When we went to Norfolk, we were in a tented camp, and I don't think we were very far from New Haven, because eventually we must have been quite near. We were in fields in a tented area, and eventually we embarked from New Haven.
Had you come across any Americans by this stage of the war?
We hadn't been in contact with any Americans. We knew all about them, being in England, of course, and had heard the stories about the GIs, etc. But we hadn't been closely involved with them.
In Norfolk, were you receiving any visits from the hierarchy, generals and so on, because D-Day is coming closer, and they were getting
We had a visit from Montgomery.
How did you...
Who gave a pep talk.
How did you find him?
Quite an imposing figure. And said what he expected from his men. And of course, one always remembered that he had specifically asked for the Durhams to be part of the invasion force. That's what they had been specifically brought back to England for. That he had great respect for what they had accomplished in the desert and out in Sicily and those places. That really they had trained over this, well, quite a long period now, in most cases at least 2 years. And I think that everybody realised that Montgomery expected the DLI divisions and brigades to be in the forefront of the landings.
Had your training changed in any way, or was it similar to the pattern that you'd become used to?
Similar to the pattern what we'd had, really. By now, I think we could say that we had covered most aspects of what was likely to happen.
We've not talked about mines and mine lifting. Have you done anything with that?
Doing nothing with that. I mean, we had the the Royal Engineers, where we'd had no training for lifting mines.
Were they telling you anything as your time came to be in the landings? Were they telling you anything about what to expect? Any lectures on what the German was like as a fighting soldier?
Well, we hadn't to be told what the German soldier was like. We knew what they'd accomplished. And we knew as intelligent, we regarded ourselves as intelligent people. And one knew that what they had accomplished from 1939 onwards, and we knew that they'd had great training during the 1930s, which made us, as ordinary soldiers, wonder where the thinking had been as far as the British military mind had been. Which makes me think even now that one can't afford to be complacent and think that the British Army should not be depleted in any way. We know now what even modern warfare now is entirely different to what it was, but I still think that as a British force should be a thing that should not be neglected in any way. That we should still always be prepared and remember the lesson that we'd had then. One's got to assume that really, in a way, we were very fortunate to come out in the end as winners, if one could say one did win. So that really we hadn't to be told what the German army or the German soldier could accomplish.
Coming up to the time that you were going to leave, what was happening to you? As the time approached and you were actually preparing for leaving?
Well, in the camp that we were on, what we tried to do was try to maintain a good mode of thought about what was likely to happen. Things like they're against sport. Football competitions was a great thing within the battalion still. And any form of sport and physical training was still encouraged on the short period that we had while we were there. We weren't allowed out, of course. The only time I can remember coming out of the camp, there had been a bit of a delay for some reason, and we weren't allowed out for a recreational nature, but we were taken out for a route march. But after coming out of the camp, once that was accomplished, we were brought back into the camp, and any activities that took place were inside the camp. But you weren't allowed to go anywhere. Weren't allowed to leave the camp.
Were the route marches still at a pace which was rather quick? Light infantry?
The only time that you maintained the quick pace was when you were on parade. Not for a route march.
You didn't take Colonel Jeffries with you. He left you before you went to France. Who took over from him?
Well, we had a Colonel Saunders. Can't remember quite vividly what the sequence was. We had a Lieutenant Colonel Hanmer, but he had gone to the 11th Battalion. He'd been promoted, and I think Saunders. I think he gained further promotion. I think he eventually became a brigadier as well. So my mind doesn't carry us back very vividly to who was in command of the... I'm inclined to think it was still Jeffries.
Don't think he went to France with you.
Must have been Saunders.
He went out to Burma.
Oh, was it Saunders? Must have been Saunders then.
What was he like?
He was quite good, but he still doesn't come to mind in the same mind as what I had about Jeffreys and Marley. They seem to imprint on one mind better. He was quite good, not decrying him at all, but I don't think that he moved around the men as much as what the others did. But what I can remember about him was he had been a man who I think had been well trained in modern day tactics and was probably a good commander. But one seems to remember about some people better than others.
Were your tactics based on fluidity, movement?
That was the way that we had been trained for. But actually, initially, that didn't quite come out the way the training had been.
You're still brigaded with 11th.
There was still the 70th Brigade. That was the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th, or the Tyneside Scottish. And we were still the follow-up brigade to the 6th, 8th and 9th. That sequence was still being maintained in operation. But there again, this time we were a trained formation, not literally a labour formation. We could say now that we were, in my opinion, trained for the job.
Had you taken part in brigade and divisional exercises?
We'd done that? All that. That had taken place.
So the quite major manoeuvres that you would have...
We'd already done all those.
Can you take me through the initial movements coming up to actually embarking?
Well, all that happened was, when we received the order to, which later came out, we had to assemble at New Haven, and we boarded the naval vessels.
What was the scene on the docks, as you recall?
Quite congested. And there were, we boarded more like sloops and corvettes, really, that were ready to zoom the way out of the harbour. And should we say that there was quite a lot of apprehension on what was likely to happen? We knew that the landings had taken place and footholds had been gained. We had been given that information, but we're now the follow-up units which were embarking.
Had you any problems with men who went absent without leave just before they started, or showed any sign that they may come up to scratch?
No problems like that, no. Everybody knew we'd been trained to do a job, and I think the thing was really on what would really happen to people who hadn't experienced it before, what would happen in actual combat. We had received the information that the casualties hadn't been as severe as had been expected, but we knew that there had in some cases been a lot of casualties. And we knew that really what we were sent out for, which I think was about 5 days after the landings, that we would have to follow up from there and maintain the foothold that had been gained and make a breakthrough further. That was what we expected to have to be done.
Were you told what your task would be as you left, or just before you left?
Well, we had been able to... The officers then were willing to impart information, because by that time, well, everything had been gained. Nobody had access to any civilian population, anything like that. So any information that could be imparted could only serve one in good stead.
When did
one,
you leave?
Should one could say one couldn't be fooled anymore.
When did you leave?
It would be 5 or 6 days after after day one, about day plus five, I think.
The journey itself, do you recall it?
Yes, it was quite a roughish journey. The sea was quite rough. And of course, when we got near the landing areas, and we had to disembark onto the landing craft, everybody by that time was feeling a little bit sick.
How long did it take?
Not a long time.
Was it a night journey or a day?
Day journey. During the day.
What were your initial reaction to seeing that beach, although it was 5 days after the actual landing? What was the beach like?
Well, one could see what happened was we got off the onto the landing craft, and the landing craft seemed to go round and round and round and round. And one, I can remember one saying, when the hell are we going to get onto that beach now? You were sick now of being just on the water. As I say, some people were reasonable sailors, some weren't, and you felt so sick that you thought, well, right, let's get on with the job now. And when one, well, you could see then that really what devastation had taken place. I would say one got the impression that the beach was like some sort of a transit camp, really. You could see troops getting out of the water and disembarking and making their way up the beach. No shelling was taking place or anything like that then. It sort of assumed that it had become more of a clearance area by this time.
No sign of any bodies or injuries?
Well, we hadn't actually landed then. This was our initial reaction. But when it came, that the time came that we had to get out of the craft and into the water and make our way onto the beach. And when one got on the beach, whilst you weren't being shelled or harassed, that the way it being cleared, the areas were taped out on how you had to get away from the beach. But one could see there had been quite a lot of devastation, that initially they must have had quite a job, that there were scenes of where shells, etc., had dropped, and where the area had been strafed, and that sort of thing. But we were able to leave the beach without a great deal of difficulty.
How much water did they drop you into?
We weren't completely submerged, but really we were up to about shoulder level. But we were able to get out. Without, of course, we'd been trained for this now, and we were able to get to the beach without a great deal of difficulty. I can't remember us losing anybody through being submerged and had encountered difficulties or anything like that.
Whereabouts on the beach did you land?
Well, it was the Gold Beach that we landed on, where the 6th, 8th and 9th, they had made the landing there as well. But we learned that, of course, after. There was Gold Beach, where most of the British force had landed on, the Americans had been onto the beach. I think it had been divided up into about five different sections.
Was there a beach master to
signal
you on to where?
That's right. It had been organized where there was a beach master in charge, and it was his responsibility to say that apart from men, that supplies were landed and stored correctly, and quite an important task, I would think.
What were you carrying on on yourselves?
Just our normal equipment. We're fully equipped with the normal soldiers that the battalion was able to, disembark in quite good order.
Can you take me through, Mr. Turnbull, the movements immediately after landing?
Mm-hmm. Well, after we landed and we'd got onto the roadway, we marched inland for about 4 or 5 miles when we were concentrated in an area away from the what was then the front lines. It was sort of an assembly area. And I must say that really what we encountered on the way through, you could still see scenes of where actual combat had taken place. And one of the things that really impressed myself on my mind, we did come in contact with one brigadier who was inspecting the troops marching by, and when he saw our bicycle platoon coming by, his reaction was he quite fumed, and I can remember him shouting, "Bloody bikes, bloody bikes, we don't need bloody bikes." And what happened then was Sergeant Palfreyman, I remember him quite vividly, opening a gate into a field and left wing in his platoon into this field and dismounting his platoon and still saying, "Pile bikes." And that was the end of the bicycle platoon. After all the training that had taken place in England, which the idea then was that the bike platoon would swan ahead trying to maintain contact somehow with what I assume would be a retreating German force. But that was the reaction of that brigadier, who of course I don't know his name, but I can always remember him standing there with his red braid, and that was his reaction to a bicycle platoon. So that was the end of that.
So you concentrated at this point. What happened next?
Well, it was a case of reforming and trying to get the battalion and the companies to be assembled in the right formations. It was purely and simply a reassembling. The weather was fine, the sun was shining. We hadn't seen anything. We hadn't been attacked in any way or had anything to contend with. But we hadn't been there very long, I think only about 4 days.
Was it tented or were you just sleeping in the open?
Just sleeping in the open. After about 4 days, the order came that the 10th Battalion would make an attack on Saint-Pierre, the village. Well, one you then, right, the time has come now when we're going to be tested now to find out what was what. Now, I would say that this was the time that I could really feel disappointed. What happened was, of course, at this time I was the company sergeant major, and the information that had been received was that Saint-Pierre was unoccupied, and the information was, which was really quite farcical, and that was our impressions at the time, was it was unoccupied and a straight walk in. I can always remember the words, straight walk in.